Hey, stranger. The Opus is moving out and into a new season as we continue to explore the ongoing legacy of music's most iconic records. I'm your host, Adam Unz, and this season we're celebrating the 45th anniversary of Billy Joel's fifth studio album, The Stranger, a record whose critical and commercial success catapulted the piano man to superstardom. Helping us explore this classic collection are artists like Billy Joel's drummer Liberty DeVito, Regina Spektor, Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness, Rozzy, Lissy, The Arkells, Bayside's Anthony Renari, and Ben Folds. Great music shapes lives, shakes rafters, and embeds itself into our culture. So let's find out why only the good die young as we deep dive into The Stranger. The new season is out now and is brought to you by the Consequence Podcast Network and Sony Legacy Recordings. Find us at consequence.net or wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Consequence Podcast Network. Hello, and welcome to the Spark Parade, where I geek out with artists and entertainers about their cultural spark of inspiration. I'm Adam Unz, at Spark Parade on all social media. Thanks ever so much for joining me. Listen, I have got a great one for me this week. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a great one for you too. But this is a very, very exciting and special and personal episode for me. Why, you ask? Well, first of all, my guest is singer, songwriter, and gossip frontwoman Beth Ditto. And if that weren't exciting enough, her spark is Missy Elliott's second album, The Real World. Amazing, right? I mean, these are two women who I admire so much, and I love all of their music, and at the risk of sounding like a gigantic dickhead, they are both artistic visionaries. Anyway, so yeah, I was very excited about this conversation, and to be honest, it surpassed my wildest dreams of what it could be. Beth was warm and funny and thoughtful and kind, and she was just as interested in hearing about my life as I was about hers, which is fucking crazy. So yeah, we got on like a house on fire, had a real hoot. Aren't you dying to hear it? Well, then let's go! Quick Beth facts. Mary Beth Patterson, known by her stage name Beth Ditto, is an American singer and songwriter most notable for her work with the indie rock band Gossip. Her voice has been compared to Etta James, Janis Joplin, and Tina Turner. Gossip was formed in Olympia, Washington in 1999 by Ditto, guitarist Nathan Houdeshell, and drummer Kathy Mendoza. Known for their scorching live shows, which showed off Ditto's overflowing charisma and powerful voice, Gossip released their first album, That's Not What I Heard, in 2001. Mendoza left the band in 2003 and was replaced by Hannah Billy. Standing in the Way of Control, which incorporated more influences from dance punk, followed in 2006, and then Gossip transformed into a fiery dance pop act. 2009's Music for Men featured the groove-forward Heavy Cross, while 2012's even glossier A Joyful Noise brought in Cumbrian pop doctor Brian Higgins as co-producer next to Rick Rubin. Gossip will release Real Power, their first album in over a fucking decade, on March 22nd. And that's this Friday, baby! Quick, the real world facts. The Real World is the second studio album by American rapper Missy Misdemeanor Elliott, released on June 22nd, 1999, which means it'll celebrate its 25th anniversary this summer, which in turn means I'm old. Anyway, the album is noted for adding a raunchier and darker style to Elliott's music, as well as including the overt political use of the term bitch. The album features guest appearances from Beyoncé, Eve, Eminem, Lady Saw, Da Brat, Aaliyah, Big Boy of Outkast, Lil' Kim, and Redman, amongst others. The album debuted at number 10 on the US Billboard 200 charts and was certified platinum. It spawned the singles She's a Bitch, All in My Grill, and Hot Boys. And there you have it. Let's bring a little joy into the world, shall we? Here comes my chat with Beth Ditto about The Real World. First of all, a little disclaimer. When people choose things to talk about, sometimes they talk about things that I have no connection to. It's fine. I can live vicariously through other people's love of other things. When people choose things that I like make me crazy because I love them so much, it's so much more fun. So this Missy Elliott album. Oh, are you there? There we go. I see you now.
You're probably saying, sorry, I'm literally in the closet.
It's all right. I understand, like, in the closet is where I spend a lot of time. I mean, I am out of the closet. I am out of the closet in my life.
You walked into that.
Yeah. Yep. But the only time I go back in the closet is when I'm recording stuff. So
usually I would be at room, but Teddy has a cough and I just got off a press with him and he was he has his earbud things on and he's just like, and I'm like, Bob is doing interviews. So I was like, I'll go to the closet. Okay, honey, go ahead.
This is perfect. So yeah, this Missy Elliott album is my, every Missy Elliott album is my everything, but, The Real World, this has a very special place in my heart. So just so we're clear, this is not at all a hardball discussion. This is joy.
Oh, I like it all though. I want it all, baby. Give it to me. Wait, first of all, I think you have to, the question, like, would you say that I always have to ask, like, how old are you?
40, I'll be 46 on Friday.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Cause like on Friday, are you a Pisces?
Yep.
Me too.
Hey.
I love us. I do. I think we're very special people. But I think when I'm talking to somebody else about those records and when they're our age, cause I turned 43, like when you can talk about those records of somebody that's your age and they understand like sonically and visually how crazy they were, like, you know, sorry, you probably have a question, but boy, but when you say that, you know, like, it's like, what a time to be, oh, you know, that was like this, that was like, what was it? What was his name? Oh my God. He did all the videos.
Hype Williams.
Was it?
Hype Williams.
Hype Williams. And yeah. Spike Williams and Hype Jones. That's a good team.
Other way. Spike Jones and Hype Williams.
Yeah, yeah, I like to get them mixed up. Sheena E or Sheila Easton. When I was a kid, I couldn't remember. I'd be like, Sheila E? Sheena E?
I mean, both amazing. Both amazing. So
both incredible. And you know they're different. And you know that you have the chance of getting one wrong. But
yeah,
just being in that moment with those albums and those visuals, such a time that like, it was such a time. You know, it's so awesome to talk to somebody else who was like there, you know?
For real. Yeah, yeah.
You're like, yeah, when she did the fucking Mega Man like reference and she was in the huge plastic bag and like, you know, and then she's a bitch, all that stuff. Anyway, please.
Yeah.
Please, please, Adam, please.
I mean, all that stuff and more.
Oh, yeah.
The way these chats start is kind of with your origin story. So your origin story with what we're talking about. So do you remember, can you remember hearing The Real World for the first time or like knowing that it was coming or any of that stuff? Vague memories, any of that?
Oh, I do. Okay, so I'd also like to say, Adam, like I am a loose cannon and I don't like format. I do because I'm just a talker. I'm like, let's fucking talk. You know what I mean? And it's also hard for me not to ask questions about you because I want to know. That's what makes things fun.
This is all very loosey-goosey. It's free form, whatever.
Okay. So I'm just asking if you want me to wait till you ask the question, then I can do that too.
No, I do not.
No, I do not. Please do not. Do not humor me. when I was, I remember because Super Duper Fly. You remember all of that. And then like you, it was like such an incredible time. And then like, it kind of like Timbaland was like really that whole sound. It was like pre-Neptunes, you know, it was like pre Pharrell being on the scene, even though of course they did Rex and Effect, you know, they had been producers for a long time, but Are You That Somebody, Aaliyah, which is still to this day, my favorite, number one favorite song of all time. But Timbaland and Missy and like, you know, up until that point, like I think it was I remember when Super Duper Fly came out and I was just like, okay, like I had been into a lot of different things. Like I was really into Tori Amos and I was really into Mamas and Papas and super into punk music and stuff like that. But then I think that record and like, so Super Duper Fly came out and then The Real World came out. And I just remember it was, I think, you know, answers in interviews change all the time, don't they? Because like you'll think and you'll be like, actually, but in this moment, when I think about it, I think that was probably the first record that I really thought about sound. And, you know, even though I grew up in a family that was very like sound savvy, like we were country as fuck, but like we talked about music a lot. Like we didn't have a lot of, you know, that wasn't like we were talking about like fucking theory or like we weren't talking about Mozart, but there was a lot of talk about like, you know, quality speaker. We were fucking poor as fuck, but my dad would like spend the grocery money on speakers. You know, it was like that. My mom was not happy about it, but everything sounded immaculate, you know? And so like growing up a family like that and always having kind of like that ear for music. But like, that was, I think the first record that I was like, I'm starting to really get it as a grown up. Like, this isn't just catchy to me. It started to make me understand why I liked other music and why it made sense to me. You know, like why I did like so many different kinds of music. And I feel like with when The Real World came out, you know, there was like, you know, if you want me, buy me clothes, give me money, you know, and it was like, do, 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 do. And so there were all of these like strings and there was all of this, like, it was just, it was the first time I remember really paying attention to something and understanding why, you know, it was beyond the words of the song, it was beyond the hook. It didn't just feel good. I was just like listening to everything and I wanted to understand everything about it. As somebody who is a musician with my dead fucking ends, honey, you know, but like, I mean, so like for you, like it, and you know, yeah, it was one of those records that I could not, in such a long time, wait for the record to come out. You know, because like when I was, I don't remember how old I was when Super Duper Fly came out, but like The Real World, what was that? Oh, 2000?
99, I think.
That's the year I graduated high school.
Yeah.
So that year, also The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill came out. You know, that's the record, that's what I got for my birthday that year, my 18th birthday in 99. Like, so there were those, like, there was, like, this real, like, music, pop music, like, I could be wrong, but the way I experienced it was, like, pop music was, you know, for me, was all about R&B and hip-hop then, because it was the most quality, sincere, but just so thought out and complex. It was so, it was incredible, but it really turned me on to, like I think made me start to realize that I was like, oh, okay. Like I actually enjoy sounds and stuff like that. Yeah. And that's your long answer to the question. You didn't even ask it.
This, just so that we are clear, do not worry or apologize for, or even think about me not liking an answer like that. That is the good stuff. That's what I am aiming for. So.
Okay, good. I'm just here. I also want to give you what you need and not waste your time. And, you know, there's that thing where you only have so much time and then I was late and I'm just like, I just want to get as much in there as I possibly can.
This is it. And this is exactly what I want.
Okay, good.
So my response to that is same. Like that, I think that time in anyone's life is kind of formative, but it was also this very specific, this moment in culture where it was like the internet was just starting. You weren't really that influenced by it yet. And being that age where it's like exactly what you said, like kind of striking out on your own. My parents were really into music too. And I was, you know, my taste is very influenced by that. But this was like,
I need to know more about that. We can't just skimmy over that, Adam. I need to know, like, where did you grow up?
in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, I love Minnesota. I really like Minneapolis and St. Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, that's a cool place to grow up, actually.
Yeah, like pretty progressive and like, you know, lots of art and culture in the Twin Cities and all that. So
yeah. And it had a really cool punk scene. It had Prince is from Minneapolis. You know, it's like really rich music scene. It's still one of my favorite places to even is to play in the country too. Like shows there are always amazing, you know. But yeah, that's a really interesting. When your parents listen to music, what was your relationship to music? Like what kind of music?
Everything. I mean, my dad especially, one of the things, have you ever gone to Electric Fetus in Minneapolis, the record store?
No.
check it out the next time you're there. It's very cool. But, it's like, we would go on trips to the record store together and just like bring home 5,000 CDs at the time. And, you know,
you did
like, that was, you know, part of a very close connection that I had with him. But it was like, you know, everything from, you know, the Rolling Stones and Aretha Franklin, and he liked, you know, jazz stuff and blues and lots of R&B and rock and soul and different kinds of influences coming in from everywhere.
Yes. Yes. God, do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have two sisters. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ah, are you the oldest?
No, the youngest. So my oldest sister is 8 years older than me. So that was another thing where it's like,
yes, yes, yes. And also that time too, what was so interesting about that was too, is that like, if you did have older sisters, I don't know about you, but I have a brother who's also 8 years older than me. Well, I have a lot of siblings, but his musical influence on me was so incredible. And it was all hair metal, you know, because he was like, it was that time, you know, and what a wild array of things, you know what I mean? But same with my dad. But my dad didn't take me record shopping. That is so cool.
Yeah. But having that stuff with my dad, like you're saying, having older siblings who can kind of turn you on to stuff. So those influences coming in and then getting to an age where you're like, actually, I like this thing and you don't know anything about
it. You're discovering your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the best things. And also like, because I think you did when it's so interesting too and specific. I think, God, it's so, I have so many things I want to say. Like, I work so hard not to, I'm like, I have so much I want to ask you, but I'm trying to stay focused. It's so interesting to have a background like that. And like, you do know a lot about music and you're taught to appreciate it and listen to it. And like, I don't know, but like, I'm assuming that the way that your dad loved music to know that you probably talked about it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like there was a lot of like conversation about like, you know, they didn't use those words like textures and like that, but like just being like, do you hear that? You know, like comparing them to other bands and stuff. It's like to have that experience and have that knowledge of music and feeling about it and then get to go into like discover your own music on, it gives you such a incredible insight into, you know what I mean? Like it almost means a different thing. Like everybody has, I don't know how to explain this, but like, it's like everybody has their own relationship to music. And of course you discovered on your own and that's a special pivotal time. But when you come from a family that does love music and loves to talk about it, when you do start to discover your own music, it's like on this other level kind of. Like I remember like kids in my class or like kids I'd talk to that they loved grunge and stuff. But then I would try to talk to them and be like, this guitar tone or, you know, whatever. And they'd be like, yeah. And I'd be like, never mind. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
It's just such a different relationship to it, I think. And I feel really grateful for that.
Yeah. And, you know, that extra level that when you love music, like there are people who listen to music and are like, oh, I don't even know what the words are. It's like in the background. Like, I love it.
Adam, hold on. Let me stop you right there. I'm not shitting you when I tell you I just found out, I'm not kidding, like in the last maybe year that people didn't pay attention to the words to music. I just found that out. I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean you don't notice? I was like, what are you talking about?
How do you know what it's about?
It's not just like, it's just not what I listen to. Like I'm, you know, and I was like, so you're telling me that when you listen to like, I don't know, like Leonard Cohen, like what are you listening to? Like, what do you listen to? Like the guitar part? I mean, which yes, you do, but I didn't know that they didn't. Like it blew my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know there were people like this until recently?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
I mean, my whole life, it is like living on, it's not like a different planet. It's like having a pane of glass between you and those people. And like, you're both experiencing the same thing, but they're just a little disconnected from your reality.
And you're to theirs too, I guess. But it's also like when you meet people, like, yeah, it's like that thing, like too, like when like people, like also learning later on, like some people just don't even listen to music at all.
Right. Yeah.
What do you do? What are you doing? What's in your head all day? Not like in a bad way, but I was like in a genuine, like asking the question, like, no, really, I'm curious. Like, what do you think about?
Yeah. But I went to high school with a guy who had absolutely no interest in travel. And he would say, if someone offered him the choice between a trip to Paris and a pack of gum, he would take the gum. And I'm just like, what the fuck? What kind of person? And I want to say that it's an incurious mind, but I don't think it's that. It's just like people are different, and people can be so different from you that you will never understand where they're coming from. And I guess it's okay. I guess you just have to, you know, be okay with it.
That always blows my mind, like in the ways that you didn't even imagine. But don't you think too that like that, what a nice, like about the pack of gum, like, don't you think like what a nice, they must be like, what, how content, like, wow, that must be awesome. Like in a way, I'm like, cool. That must be great.
Right.
So I'll take your ticket. Here's my gum. Let's have a great time. Like,
yeah.
See ya.
Like, yeah. But he also didn't care what job he did. It was like what he did with his life was not important to him. It was just like, whatever happens, happens. I don't care. And it must be in some ways kind of liberating that whatever happens to you is the right thing and you're just drifting along.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but like I don't know if it's obvious, but I have really bad ADD. And so like, I was always just like, it must be so nice to have, I've always thought that was why, like growing up, I was always like, why am I always unsettled? Why do I have to have change all the time? Why do I need to feel this way? Like, you know, a lot of it is like, you need to be challenged. Like you get bored easily, you know? And I was always just like, I hated it about myself. I didn't understand why I couldn't just be happy where I was. Or like when it was time to, you know, I moved out really young and like I had to get a job. And of course it was a fast food job. I was 16. So like, you know, and other retail things, but I was so bad at them. This connects, you'll see. But I was so bad at them. And I know why now I am bad at them. But like then I just beat the shit out of myself because I was just like, why can't I do the simplest thing that people, you know, like the, I don't, you know, like I can go to work. I do my time, you know, I clock in, I clock out, I go home. And now I'm just like, and I think my whole life, I was just like, I always was just like, I would do anything to have that feeling of just like being able to navigate the world like that. Like just being, because so many people I knew found it so easy. Mm. And I was like, I really found it really hard. I mean, now I know why, that like actually there's something in my brain that's just like, you know what? You're never going to be okay doing that. It's going to be hard for you. But back then, like it connects to me because I was always just like, never satisfied. And I think it's a gift now, but back then it was like, I felt like, I really did feel like I was a fish out of water all the time. I was like, am I stupid? Am I missing something? Like, why can't I just be content with what everybody else is like content with? You know, that's what that person that you're talking about makes me think of. Cause I remember being jealous of those people and being like, I would love so much more than anything just to be like, okay, here's a path. I can follow this A, B, C, D and go home and it doesn't matter. And I was just like, it was so hard. Does that make sense?
But you come out on the other side of that and it's like, oh,
now I feel fine.
And realizing that it's like all of that inner turmoil. And I think that's the case for artists, you know, not across the board, but very much of the time that it's like, why the fuck can't I be one of those people who can just be like, yeah, I'm going to work in an office. No big deal. It doesn't bother me. And for people like us who are like, no, I have something that I really love. And this is the thing that I want to do. And finding that thing and saying,
and almost like you don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Like you're just, I'm out. Like it just, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And now it sense, like why, like I didn't have a choice, but like you, it was like there was no, it was a no-brainer. It was like, no, I'm gonna stay around or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Do you see that person now?
No, we lost touch in high school, so
you didn't have a lot in common.
No,
I understand.
Yeah.
No, it seems like you were really close. Yeah.
Time for a quick break, because somebody's got to keep the lights on around here. But we'll be right back.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But I guess the connection from me to developing your taste and to more specifically Missy, like at that time, feeling those feelings of like yearning, of wanting to do the thing that you are here to do, the thing that you were made for, and starting to get these sounds coming at you through the radio, through, you know, buying albums. And I was into R&B. There was, you know, like SWV and Mary J. Blige and whatever.
Oh, of course. Yes. TLC.
Loved. And then One in a Million, that the first, second Aaliyah album, that was like really the kind of, to me, the launch pad for Missy and Timbaland really coming into my consciousness. And just like those, the beats, the way that the songs are structured, there's like something not sparse about it, but there's like room for the sounds to breathe. And on The Real World in particular, it's like beats, maybe a little, you know, bass coming through. And then it's this expansive thing that like just a little bit is so much.
That's a good call. Yeah, I like that a lot. You're right. Everything mattered equally and was in its place. Nothing was battling each other. Not even when the music came in to when the vocal came in, you know? I think it's so deceptively simple in a way, because if you just listen to it at face value, you don't hear the layers that are going on. Because when you say that, one thing that makes me think is that like, you're absolutely right. I think that's one of those things one of the hallmarks of a good producer is knowing when to stop. And, you know, sometimes that's the hallmark of a good producer is when they just keep going and it's crazy and it just gets crazier and crazier. But like, I think it's when you know, it's just as important. This is one of my life, like mottos is that like, sometimes it's just important to know what not to do and what party, you know, sometimes it's more important that you didn't get invited to a party. It says way more about your character than it does if you fucking did, you know, like it's kind of the same thing. It's like knowing when to just stop and let it be what it is. And like that, and also just like, it's the, when something can be like so deceptively simple, but then you listen to it back and you're like this, you know, Missy is a harmony fucking genius. She's a harmony genius. I think that's the other thing I don't know if people realize sometimes. I think some people do, but you know, I'm pretty sure she wrote all of Leah's harmonies and then all of the harmonies on her own records. And like, that was another element that was like, you know, like, but also while I'm thinking about it too, we cannot forget the team that was Missy and Timbaland. Like those records could not have happened and the magic not have been made because they were both producers. They both produced those records.
Right.
So like, that's a big deal too. But like, they were both really good at layering things and giving things like multiple textures and sounds without them being combative. And that's like really, also really, if you think about it, like two different producers doing that, that's not common. Like that, I mean, like things that don't sound like they're fighting each other.
Right.
Like, it's such a special, I'm telling you, I could talk about it all day. Like, it was such a moment. Like, just knowing, like it was, I just don't feel like records have been made like that since.
No.
For me, that spoke to me the same way.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, probably age too. And there's probably a lot of records I haven't listened to, but I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel the same way. And it is, but this, the, like, kind of revolution in the way my mind was blown by these sounds that were so like futuristic and sounded like nothing else I'd ever heard of before. And then suddenly they were everywhere. And it was like, you know, that and the Neptune stuff was like Everyone wanted it, and they were so good at adapting that sound for the people they were working with. But when Supa Duba Fly came out, it was just like, I could not deal with how much I loved it. And on that album, there's more, the production is like, there's more going on. You know, you listen to like Sock It To Me and that sample just like, nah, 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 nah,
nah.
So incredible.
But you're right. Like, I don't know. Is there more going on? I have to think about that. Because in a way, I feel like it's less just because, maybe that's not what you're saying, just because that stands on its own, you know?
I would say, just comparing the first album and the second album, in the first album, it still has that space. It still is like the production is not overwhelming anything, but there's a little like a little more melody maybe undergirding the songs. There's more like noticeable samples.
Oh, I see what you mean. It's more melody. So it kind of, and of course, that's going to dictate the actual vocal part too. Yes. I do see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then you go into like a song like Hot Boys, where it's just like this tiny little beat underneath it, and it still feels, it's so like blows you away. It feels so like rich and textured.
Yeah.
But it is just enough production.
Perfect.
And
it's perfect. Mm. It's the most perfect album ever made. You like, prove me wrong. I mean, it's like, oh God, oh my God. Crazy feeling, like, you know, that song made me stay. And then Beyonce is like, again. Like, mm-hmm. There's like, so they're all the hits too, but the slow jams on that fucking record. Oh my God. Is it that one or is it, which one is Friendly Spaz on? It's on that one. Which is one?
That is Supa Duper Fly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the most hilarious thing, I have like the original CD of this album and it says Crazy Feelings featuring Beyoncé Knowles of Destiny's Child. Cause it's like, who is this woman? Where did she come from?
Yeah. You're like, who is Beyoncé? I know.
Yeah. And sadly she was never heard from again.
Never. Nobody will ever know. It's sad. We'll never know. Lost to history, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a good point as well. The album tracks. There are so many to me that like Mr. DJ,
been there one more time. We can play it back to back. We go rock it two times. I'm like telling you that album.
So good.
Ooh, yeah.
So
it's
good.
So good. Oh my God. It's so good.
Yeah.
I remember when this isn't the same, but I remember like when Miss E So Addictive came out.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was always what blew my mind. Like when I talked to Missy Elliott fans a lot, well, not deep Missy fans, but like really like, you know, people who like her a lot too. They, the songs that they know are always from that album.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always like, what? Like it always blows my mind because I mean, that album's incredible, but I'm always like, but have you heard The Real World? Like, you know, it's like, what? But yeah, always blows my mind. But when that album came out, we were so excited because after The Real World, you were just like, okay, the record's coming out. It was like, we went to the record store. We waited for it to open and we went and bought it the day it came out. It's like that excited. Me and my three friends, it was like, yeah, that record. And also the videos. Oh man, it was just such a package thing of incredible minds and a curation. Almost of like that, I don't feel like happens, you know, like there was no like in my mind, this isn't just about that record, but this was what it brings up is that like that time is so special in music history because I feel like today, I could be wrong, but sometimes when people make records, it's like so dispensable. Like it's just like we are going to make a record, but it's like there is this like thought of being like what you put on here is like, how do I say it? Because I don't want to sound dismissive of what people make now, but you had to be really thoughtful and you had people on the record. You wanted to be on the record. It wasn't because if it was cool or whatever. And then after the record came out, people weren't fucking falling out with each other. It was like people were making, it was such an era of like art, and it was high art too. It wasn't just pop culture. It was creating what pop culture looked like instead of being the other way around. Like it does. And that's just Missy Elliott for you too. What a fucking...
The whole package.
And she started the trend. Like everything would sound like Missy and Timbaland after that.
Right.
And God, just thinking about it, it overwhelms me because I'm just like, what is like comparable to that now?
Nothing.
And like doing something because it sounded good and doing something because it's like was like just what was going on in your mind and getting it onto, you know, the record as opposed to like, I feel like there's so much like, I don't know. I don't want to say something and it not be true, like the way I really feel. But sometimes it's just like, oh, it makes me feel so many things. But when you had to put something on a record and you had to get people in a room, you know, you didn't send files. You didn't, you know, you had to be in the fucking room to write it, to edit it, to whatever. Like that makes things, you had to make it fucking count. So it had to be fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Or it wasn't going to make it on the motherfucker. There was no question about it.
Right.
And so like, I feel like that is not anybody's fault, or it's not like youth these days or any certain like band or songwriter or whatever, but that really makes things like you have to work for it because and you're paying for it out the ass, you know, studio time, all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So that really like puts this like fire under you to get it fucking right.
Right.
You know, like you got to get it right. This isn't, you can't change, you know, once it's out, it's out. Then that's such a special moment. God, can you imagine? What? So cool.
Yeah. And it just like, you know, not like you're saying, not having the ability to just record and record and record and record because it's digital and everybody has all this, the disk space to figure out, you know,
yeah, they as can much just... space as you want in the whole wide world. Yeah. That should have made music cooler, shouldn't it? I mean, not that music isn't cool, but like, it's funny when you think about it. It's like when you think about the internet coming out or like with the internet coming, I don't think anybody's thought was like, oh, this is going to turn into a shit show or like this, you know what I mean? Or like, it's just like anything. It's like, you just thought about how like all the potential that it had to make everything cooler. Even you're like, what? We have fucking infinite amounts of tracks to do how many crazy harmonies on? You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Like you didn't think about it the other way, just making it may make things easier. I sound negative, but I don't mean to, because I'm not shitting on anybody's process. But like, yeah, it's just rare that I do interviews where we talk about music like this, and it makes me think a lot of things. So I'm like, oh my God, there's so much to think about, you know?
Yeah. But it's the stuff about the internet. Like it's a good thing and a bad thing. There's, you know, ways that the internet has made, making art much more accessible to lots of other people, the way that different, sounds can influence people because they have access to all the world's music instead of having to say like, oh, that album's only out in the UK and I'm not going to be able to get it for 6 months or whatever.
Exactly. That's what I was thought was going to be like. I was like, this is the future. Like, you know, that's I was like, oh my God. And it's still really cool. I mean, like even with queer culture, like youth culture, any like kind of like movement or just like isolation, like now you can reach out and have a community like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the good shit, you know?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I guess it is. Like, I feel like I just want to say, like, I don't mean to be negative because actually when I think about it, it's actually, no matter what the song sounds like, I take it all back because no matter what the record is and no matter what the artist is, it's like now anybody can play music and make a record. And actually, no matter what it is, no matter how I feel about it, or if it's bad or good or who likes it and who doesn't, that's kind of the most important thing. So, you know what? I changed my tune.
Good. Yeah. It's, you know.
Take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess if we're going to ask any real questions, because I like to do at least one at some stage, how do you think... Like, what is the lasting impact of that album on you? Do you think that it has, you know, just affected anything about how you listen to music, your taste, anything about your work? Let me know.
I think it's like I was saying earlier. It's like, you know, it made me, for one, it gave me a standard, not personally, but like I kind of measure up all. When something is like your favorite record of all time, you know, and I think there are ones that stand there with it. Too, that I could mention that, like, just talking about that record, you know, they're on the same plane for different reasons, but like this one specifically, I just have to say that because I'm like, don't get it twisted. There's other ones there for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is that, like, I think it reminds me that pop culture can actually be really fucking cool and that it can be made by people who were friends back in the day and it doesn't have to be about. I think that's the other thing that spoke to me about Timbaland and Missy. Is that their history is so cute and so sweet, you know, that they were friends, you know, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that for someone like that, me, that means a lot. You know, like, I think being in a band with Nathan and he and I being friends since we were like, I was a 13, 14 year old kid. And I just love that kind of story and how when you find a musical partnership that's like that, like they're very rare and they're funny and they're their own thing and you can't push them together and you can't force things out of them because they're so special and natural that it doesn't, it's not a product. It's not a commodity. It's not something that like you can make happen and they'll do it when they're ready to do it, when they want to do it, because that's how friendship works and that's how it works between them. And I feel like I connect with it like that with Nathan, not like Nathan and I are the Missy and Timbaland of my life, but like, I love that story and I love that they're Southern too. And then the impact that it had on me for sure. It's hard on one hand, just, you know, face value. It's like, they're my favorite song and they're very like simple, like how do I explain that? They're complicated, deceptively complicated. Like it sounds so simple at first. It's something I think other producers and think, you know, there's, or whatever. I mean, how would I word it? It's like, there's so much to say about it. I'm always trying to word things so I'm not throwing anybody in the bus or making, like, I don't want to make people, you know what I mean? Someone's like, don't say that. It could sound rude, but like, I don't want to shit on anybody else's process or anything, but like, there's something like, I feel like people would see, like you would think about, like, I just wonder if, yeah, the kind of magic that it has doesn't happen. It doesn't happen all the time. And I don't love that record. And I could never really know because I'm in it, but I want to think that I don't love that record just because it was my age and that was like my time with music. But like, maybe, I'm sure it's hard to know when you're like, is it because I'm old and that was my jam or is this nostalgia? But like, really, like, I think the imprint that it left on me was that like, there is the reward, I think, of taking risks. And I think just being who you are and putting sounds on things because you like them there and not trying to make some big hit, not trying to make something crazy. Like, I don't know what their intentions were, but I always feel like there's something so pure and just doing it for the love of music that it makes me think of. And I mean, I think about that with Missy. I feel like that's one of the reasons why she doesn't like crank out albums all the time. It's because she's like, I'm not in the mood to write an album. Why would I make an album that doesn't feel inspired and good to me? Like, I mean, I don't know if that's why, but I can definitely relate to that. I feel like when you are put into a machine and music becomes a commodity and a product, then you are expected to update and refresh your product no matter what it means, for better or for worse. And I think when you want to, like when you actually enjoy what you do, you want to take the time and let it be what it is. And you like want to have fun doing it. Like you have to let it breathe. And that record to me is like a capsule of two people having a good time, enjoying, like coming off of probably the successes that they were having with Super Duper Fly and then, you know, Aaliyah and all these other things, and being like, let's put the fucking money that we made into it. Let's make the record we want to make. Let's get, you know, let's get in the studio. Let's do it. It's like, well, this is our time. You know, like that whole excitement is really relatable to me in this way. Not, you know, of course, never had that success. But like, that's not what I mean. It's like, there's something, it's the same way about punk music. And like, it's just like, there's something cool about that to me. It's just one of those records that stands on its own. And the story behind it, or that I built up in my head, that told myself in my head about it, is just that like, it's flawless. It's fucking flawless front to finish. There's no filler. Everything is a good song. Like the word hit doesn't even matter to me. Like it's not a thing. And like, they were just so in tune with each other. And I always just like, I think that for me, like as somebody who makes music, that's why it resonates with me. And then on the other hand, it's just like, it's just such a solid album with such good taste that it always, it's like as an older person now looking back on it, like maybe if you'd asked me when I was 25, the answer would have been different. But like now looking back on it, I'm like, you really realize how taste is forever and it's all yours. Like you can get it wrong. You know, other people may not like what you're doing, or this or that, but like everything, when you're trying to placate, you know, when you're trying to like make people happy or be cool or whatever it is in the moment, it's never, it doesn't, you know, sometimes it works. It's so hard. What am I trying to say? Because I'll say something, I'll be like, no, that's not it. But honestly, I guess what I mean is like, it has taste and taste is timeless. And there's just something that's young about it and that has the excitement of just like, let's fucking go, you know? And that I don't know. That's the energy that matters to me the most. And I think that's what inspires me in my life. And I love, you know, that's still kind of the standard that I hold good music to, and not necessarily does it sound like this record, but like, is it as quality as this, you know? And I'm still waiting for the day that I'm like, the full record sounds like this, you know? And that's the other thing too. There weren't a million producers on it. That was it. You know, it wasn't like there weren't a fucking million songwriters on it. There weren't, you know, people collaborated. It's just such a different thing. Now it feels like some things can be so piecemeal. It's, you know why it's hard to answer this question and be really direct about it is because so much has changed in music. Mm-hmm. And my relationship to music is really different and complicated too. I mean, everybody's is, but like, when that's what you do for a living, you're just like, I don't know. But it stands out because of taste. I mean, easily that's, I think that at the end of the day, and to me, it's, I'm just repeating myself, but it's two people making something for the sake of it being as good as it fucking can be, you know, and being like, let's go. That's the energy that it gives to me. But yeah, when you write songs for the love of songwriting and you make a record for the love of making a record and not because someone wants you to do it, you feel the pressure to make a hit or you feel the pressure to follow a trend or strike while the iron's hot, you can really tell. And I think Super Duper Fly is that for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautifully said. And I agree with everything.
It took me a long time to get there, but that's my brain.
No, that was... That was perfect. And I think that is a lovely note to finish on. On this podcast, we save the ass kissing to the end so that it's not awkward during the interview. So the new album is incredible. And this is very meaningful to me. Your music means a lot to me. So getting to be able to talk to you about an album that means a lot to me too, what a thrill.
That is very sweet. It's very hard for me to take compliments, believe it or not, but thank you so much. And I really appreciate you having me on your podcast. I love podcasts.
Yeah.
So thank you, Adam. I appreciate it. And have a good time in New York.
Thank you. Thank you so much for making time for me.
Yeah, of course. Bye, doll. You are so calm and good at this. How do you do it? How do you like?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're good. What a pro.
Thank you. Yeah. Right. Take care.
Bye, doll.
Bye-bye. Bye. Perfect. Incredible. Life-changing. I cannot thank Beth enough for chatting with me. Oh, the delightful new gossip album, Real Power, is out on March 22nd, and you should listen to it over and over as soon as you can. Okay, quick spark of the week from me. I went to see James Acaster's new show, Heckler's Welcome, at the Beacon Theater here in New York City, and it was extremely hilarious. If you don't know him already, James Acaster is a British stand-up comedian who I love. He is a self-described weirdo, which, if you see him, tracks. But it is a brand of weird that perfectly aligns with my taste. And as the title suggests, he invites the audience to heckle him throughout the show, and that leads to a lot of unexpected moments that are just fucking delightful. So, yeah, check him out if he comes to your city or, you know, wait until it's inevitably turned into a special so you can watch it from home. And that's about it this time around. Please follow me on social media at Spark Parade. Please rate the show 5 stars and leave me such a lovely, sweet, and kind review wherever you can. And until next time, bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.